I'll try to do better.
No, it's good.
You're listening to Please Be Reasonable, where we seek to speak humbly and passionately about things that matter and things that don't.
Hello, hello. Welcome to Please Be Reasonable. I'm your co-host, Sam.
And I'm your co-host, Josh.
Josh.
Yes, Sam.
It's good to be with you. It's been too long.
Yeah, but here we are.
We've been on a little hiatus.
Summer hiatus.
Yeah, a little super lazy hiatus.
Scheduling busy lives.
Yeah.
Mr. Becoming a full-time pastor.
Yeah. It's been crazy, but it's good. I'm actually really stoked. I don't know how much we want to talk about this on the show, but...
Not much.
But we actually, like, sat down and, like, worked out some content and a schedule and even lined up interviews and stuff for the year. So I'm really stoked about the content we have for you guys for the rest of this calendar year. We got some really cool stuff coming down the pipe. A lot of stuff you guys asked for or recommended. And then a couple topics that were really weird that me and Josh were just like, oh, we got to do this. Like, we got to do this. And speaking of weird topics that no one asked for... Tonight's a little weird.
We're going to talk about...
Aliens. Not the cool movie.
Did you see the new Aliens movie?
I didn't see the new Aliens. I really want to.
Did you see the old Alien movies?
Well, like the old one from like the 70s?
Yeah.
Alien?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, yes. That's a classic.
I don't know if I ever saw them, actually.
Oh, man.
Like, I grew up kind of like... I mean, it's a little bit like almost like horror...
Oh, it's
genre,
horror. Yeah,
I
it's
guess.
Horror genre.
So I kind of grew up like horror is like not really something Christians should be into. And I still kind of like I might be a little less like insistent, like dogmatically or doctrinally about that or whatever. But I still kind of personally don't see value in some of that.
Really? So you didn't see either of the Conjuring movies?
No.
So we don't have to get into this at all, but...
Another episode.
We should do an episode on this.
We should, for sure.
But we have a mutual friend who I won't mention on name by the podcast yet, but I probably will if we do an episode on this. But he said, when the year Conjuring 2 came out, he listed that as his favorite Christian film of all time.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's definitely interesting themes in some of that stuff. I did see Prometheus, which was sort of like a prequel to the Alien universe,
yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Ridley Scott.
Yeah.
He knew all the old and the new ones, right? And
yep.
I think it's interesting just kind of seeing him explore kind of this concept of where did life come from under like a natural worldview.
Everyone hated that movie. I liked it.
I didn't hate it.
I enjoyed it. I'm pretty much a sucker for sci-fi though, Josh. Like, pretty much any sci-fi movie is just gonna get me going, and I'll enjoy it. Like,
yeah,
I tell people this all the time.
Well, me too.
I'm kind of picky about movies, but at the same time, I know I have terrible standards. And you know how I know that? I like every Star Trek movie. I mean, every Star Trek movie, Josh. Josh, I like the one where they go and rescue the whales. In San Francisco.
I think I missed that one.
They're terrible. Like, some of the Star Trek movies are objectively terrible, and I'm still like, I could watch this all day.
Outer space, baby.
Yeah.
Life on other planets.
Exactly.
So
that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
We're talking about aliens.
Whether...
Not the xenomorphs that pop out your stomach, not Mr. Spock, live long and prosper, but real, potentially alive... Illegal aliens from south of the border. So we're talking about the wall today and immigration.
Another episode. But first...
Can that one just not be an episode? Can we not do an episode on the border wall, please?
Well, not on the wall, but on the general topic of...
Immigration. We should do one on that.
And
I actually have some cool thoughts
Christian,
on that.
What the Christian response
is
or could be or should...
For that.
Yeah, awesome.
Man, we shouldn't have made our schedule already.
Hey, it's flexible. And you guys can tell us what you want to hear us talk about.
Yeah, for real. So we're talking about aliens. We're talking about, is there life out there?
And does an atheistic worldview expect life out there? Does a Christian worldview expect life out there? What happens if we find life out there?
Yeah, I think it's so interesting because it's such a thing. It's the idea of, like, is there extraterrestrial life seems like such just a fantastic kind of discussion, and yet it actually has some really interesting connotations on the discussion of faith and the discussion, like, the relationship between science and faith. So I think it'll be cool.
But first, do you want to try a new segment?
Oh, yes. This is our new segment.
We're going to try to mix things up a little and keep the show interesting.
Yeah. So, Josh, you're writing a book,
In theory, yes.
What's it about?
It's about dinosaurs.
It's about dinosaurs. So we're going to introduce a new segment for a while. We're just going to see how it works, see if you guys like it, where you're going to take a couple of minutes and give us some interesting dinosaur facts, right?
So the book is going to kind of be related to the evangelical culture we grew up in, and the prominent idea that dinosaurs and all of, you know, the history of creation is happened in 6 days, and then kind of approaching kind of some other theology related to an old earth and other things, and kind of looking at it, some of those ideas, how to approach it, looking at some things with an open mind, trying to look at, like, what is possible, what is plausible, how do we consider such things, how can we embrace the uncertainties of some of those aspects while also embracing the confidence in God's creation. And so just looking at all kinds of aspects that people might have questions about dinosaurs, or that their kids might have questions about.
So what you're telling me is you're going to tell us cool dinosaur facts?
Yep.
It's a dinosaur.
And that's what we're calling this segment. It's a dinosaur.
So today's question is, are there human footprints with dinosaur footprints?
Now, really quick, if you did not grow up in the evangelical Christian subculture like we did, you might be asking yourself, why is this even a question? This is ridiculous, right?
I don't know. I grew up in it.
I know. That's the thing. Like, so we grew up in this conservative subculture.
So did you hear this kind of thing growing up? What did you remember about this?
I heard this probably in a church setting and at a school setting. And I heard it via Ken Ham both times.
Really?
Yeah, it was through some kind of video
mm-hmm.
that he did. Like, I vaguely remember this, but I remember specifically in the video, like, an animation showing dinosaur footprints and human footprints. And I remember Mrs. Doyle talking specifically about how that was the fossil record giving evidence against itself and against the evolutionary.
So the conventional geology says dinosaurs went extinct 65 million years ago, never lived with humans. And so there's these claims in a lot of Christian circles that there's footprints that show humans and dinosaurs together. And this obviously disproves all that, improves the Bible and recent creation. And scientists just ignore it or whatever because they don't like it.
So the real question is, oh, here comes my dog. Click, 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 click.
So what's the real question?
The real question is, did humans ride dinosaurs into battle?
That's the real question. And science can't really answer that question.
But your imagination can.
Oh, yes. So anyway, I looked into this, and it's actually kind of interesting. It seems to point back. It's called the Paluxy Riverbed in Glen Rose, Texas, is where there's these footprints. And back in the 30s, this guy found a trader store where there were these blocks of stone with these carvings in them,
mm-hmm.
like these giant footprints and toes. And there were reports that there were, like, more of them in the riverbed in the ground. And he went to check it out, and he found all these dinosaur footprints and supposedly some human footprints as well. But when you look into it, it seems that the ones that are, like, in these blocks of stone are, like, carved by people to sell. And the ones that are in the ground are really vague and shaped like dinosaurs, and apparently are just dinosaur footprints that were, like, eroded more to be more ambiguous. But they're, like, spaced and sized like the other dinosaur prints around him and everything. Mm-hmm. And so even like Answers in Genesis and the other major organizations today are like, yeah, this isn't really a thing that's been proven. We probably shouldn't be spreading this thing anymore.
Wow. Really?
Yeah.
They backed off it.
Yeah. Just saying, hey, this evidence isn't really there, but it kind of spreads as, you know, sort of an urban legend because it's like exciting. It's cool.
Yeah.
And it can be like a little like disappointing to be like, oh, that's not really a sure thing. That was kind of a cool thing that I heard. But I think we can, you can kind of lose sight in all that of just the amazingness that we have these footprints of dinosaurs.
Yeah.
Because it's actually kind of interesting that they say there's more dinosaur footprints than dinosaur fossils mm-hmm. that we have. Which if you think about it, like a dinosaur can only leave one body if it fossilizes, but it could leave thousands of footprints. And there's things we can learn about dinosaurs from footprints that we can't learn from the bones. Like
skin texture and stuff like that.
Well, no, not necessarily that, but like just looking at like how far apart they are, we can try to tell like if they were running or like how they were carrying themselves when they were running. The fact that we haven't found tail marks with footprints suggests that dinosaurs weren't like dragging their tails, but they were holding them upright. And there's different things we can learn about how dinosaurs moved when they were alive that we can't learn just from the bones.
Oh, that's cool.
So it's I think it's pretty cool that, you know, that information was left available for us to discover. So there's things we can learn about dinosaurs from their footprint fossils that we can't learn just from the bones. And it just kind of adds to what we can discover from these creatures that are no longer exist, but are really cool.
It's just amazing to me that fossils even exist. You know what I mean? Like the idea that there should be anything preserved from that far in the past,
yeah.
regardless of your view of the age of the earth, yeah. is still just like, that's
so And it's stunning. Really, it's really cool to think under a long view of just this idea that like, yeah, like if there were no fossils, there's so much we wouldn't learn about it. But yeah. because of that, like it's this record that exists to like tell us about the history of creation basically. And it's kind of cool to think of like that unfolding and that like now we're able to look back and discover things about it and just kind of marvel at it.
Yeah. How much do you think it costs to get a fossilized dinosaur skull? Probably a lot.
They're right? actually, you can buy them online places, but yeah. I mean, I think it's hundreds or thousands or something.
Wow.
I don't know.
So no T-Rex skull for your living room?
Probably not.
Not going to happen?
No. Anyway, so there's a little thing. That's kind of an example of the kind of stuff I'm working on. If you liked that, let us know. If you didn't like it, let us know, because we'll probably keep doing it otherwise.
Moving on.
So, aliens.
Aliens. We need to get a picture of that guy, the History Channel guy with the crazy hair. Aliens. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. No.
No? You haven't seen that meme?
Oh, yeah. Okay, whatever. There's so many memes.
That one's like a big deal.
Yeah.
You gotta know your meme, Josh.
Knowyourmeme.com. So, Christians... Do Christians believe there's life on other planets?
If you read the C.S. Lewis space trilogy...
C.S. Lewis does. Did. I feel like a lot of Christians think there's not.
Yeah.
It's kind of like... Yeah. Like, God created us, we're special, and there's nobody else out there.
Yeah, I think that's probably just an unspoken assumption amongst a lot of evangelical Christians, centering around this idea of the uniqueness of mankind as holding God's image, that it's just like, yeah, of course he didn't put life on other planets.
I remember this Christian sci-fi book I read once. Yes. Where there's two characters, like the non-Christian character is talking to the Christian character how he thinks there might be life somewhere, and the Christian character points to his Bible and says, well, there doesn't seem to be much room for them in here.
Please tell me you know the name of that book.
I'm not I'll see if I can. I've got a vague idea in my head. I'll have to Google it to see if it...
Well, we have to get that in the show notes.
Yeah. But in the non-Christian worldview, a kind of a natural worldview, it seems to be a pretty common idea that there might be life out there.
Yeah. I was curious about this. I don't know if this came up in your reading at all, but I feel like this, and this might just be my awareness of it, but I feel like this general just assumption that life is out there somewhere seems new to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it might not be. Like, that might totally just be the way I've perceived and gained information.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like when I was younger, I saw those things presented as, like, kind of absurd or fantastical. Mm-hmm. And now it seems like a really common, easy discussion point amongst outspoken intellectuals and scientists and those things.
Yeah, that could be. I'm not sure exactly. I know, like, there's been a lot of scientific advances in the last few decades that have kind of lent support for those ideas. Like, we've started discovering planets and other stars, which until about 20 years ago was only theoretical, and now we're discovering tons of them. And we're discovering more liquid water, like under the ice and moons around Jupiter and Saturn, and there's all kinds of stuff leading to the idea that there could be habitable conditions for life around in other places. And for a natural worldview, if you believe that life arose on our planet from chemicals, you know, without any divine intervention or anything, then it's natural to figure, well, that if it happened here, there's nothing, and you don't think there's anything special about us, then it could happen anywhere.
Yeah, if life is a potential outcome of matter plus time, then it should probably exist in more than one place.
Yeah, and there's an even more specific issue with when you look at the specifics of scientists studying the history of the Earth. They say that the evidence for life on our planet goes back almost to the beginning of, like, how old they think the Earth is, or like when, you know, the Earth cooled enough to have oceans and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems that, you know, from these lines of evidence, that it didn't take very long for life to arise. Like, it wasn't like there was a billion years of time in the ocean with no life and chemicals finally figured it out. Like, it happened, like, pretty quickly in this timeline. So that would seem to suggest that it would be pretty easy.
Come on, it's just cells doing cell things. I mean, that doesn't seem that complicated, right? Am I right?
Well, scientists still haven't figured out how to form DNA from the chemicals in DNA.
Yeah, but strike lightning onto tar, and eventually you end up with an amoeba.
Well, not exactly. But this leads to...
I love it because it's just like, how can I respond to that?
I'm trying to go somewhere with this. This leads to the Fermi paradox, which is the idea that if life is easy to arise and should be everywhere in the universe, then why haven't we found any?
Yeah.
And as an aside, you know, there's a lot of Americans that believe in UFOs and that sort of thing, but we're kind of talking about scientists who don't believe that stuff's real. Yeah.
Scientists who've been bought by the government. I've seen X-Files, Josh. I know how it works.
That the
truth is out there.
Those claims don't measure up to the rigorous peer-reviewed scientific process.
The scientific process, which is controlled by the
government. And it's interesting because there's a lot of, like, popular explanations for the Fermi paradox that, you know.
Yeah, you should Google this because there's a ton out there on it. In fact, I think, was it This American Life or Radiolab just did an episode on the Fermi paradox?
I think maybe. I haven't listened to it. There's an article on waitbutwhy.com on the Fermi paradox that's really good. Just kind of popular explanation of it. And there's a lot of explanations where people assume there are aliens out there, but, you know, they're too far away, or they just don't want to contact us, or, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Have you seen Earth? Would you call us?
I read this book called Where Is Everybody by Stephen Webb that goes into a lot of these solutions, and he explains why a lot of, like, deep-thinking scientists are not satisfied by a lot of those explanations.
Yeah.
You know, even if other galaxies are too far away, it's like just taking conservative estimates of, like, how long it would take an advanced civilization to expand. Like, they should have colonized our galaxy. If they were somewhere else in our galaxy, they should have found our planet and colonized it by now.
Yeah.
Much less like that we haven't seen signs of them, like, you know, putting out signals or whatever. And any arguments about like sociological behavior, they don't want to find us, they want to do something else or whatever, requires every other civilization to behave that way with no exceptions.
Yeah.
And so a lot of scientists don't consider that likely. Now, the Christian kind of assumes we are the only life out there. So,
kind of. Generally. It's generally the assumption.
So there's not really a paradox for the Christian. But there is kind of an interesting thought experiment of, like, if we do discover life out there.
I don't know if you remember this in high school, but do you remember Matt Dillon?
Yep.
He used to use this, like, this specific mm-hmm. thing as, like, it was, like, a go-to example for how rock solid is your faith.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he would say, when he was talking about, like, how sure your faith is, like, he would quickly go to the example of, like, if a UFO landed on our parking lot and aliens came out, what would that do to your faith in Jesus? And he'd always quickly just be like, I'd be good. Which... I'm not digging on Matt Dillon. He's one of the coolest human beings alive. I just, like, that's stuck in my mind. Like, it's so strange to me that's like a go-to example of, like, if there were aliens, would that shake your faith? Which was a theme in X-Files a lot. Because Scully was Catholic, you know what I'm saying? And so she went back to that. And in fact, there were times when Mulder it'd be really ham-fisted, and he'd be like, how can you believe in a God when there's... aliens or whatever else angsty thing he was saying. But yeah, did you watch X-Files, Josh?
No, that was probably another thing that was a little too scary or something. I don't know.
You should go back. It's good TV.
Yeah, it might be entertaining, also a little dated probably.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like a lot of Christians, you know, assume based on reading of the Bible that, you know, talks about God creating Earth. Seems like everything was made for Earth.
Yeah.
Even under kind of some of the views we've talked about, old Earth creationism, theistic evolution, where you accept a lot of the scientific claims about, this, you know, the size and age of the universe and all these kind of things, there's still this idea that humans are the purpose of creation, the pinnacle of creation. And so that kind of supports this idea that there's no life anywhere else. There's also kind of this, you can look more specifically, though, like if we find microbial life elsewhere in the universe, then I feel like a lot of Christians would, even if they thought that wasn't possible, if it became clear that it was, then I feel like Christians would generally integrate that. And, you know, God is a creative God. He's just so creative. He didn't want to just create life here. He created it all over the place.
How arrogant does it sound, though, to be like, oh, God made us so awesome that he didn't make any other creatures? I know that's not the point. Like, it's mm-hmm. centered on this idea of the image of God and, like, the weight of that theologically. Yeah. It just sounds kind of...
Yeah, well, that's kind of arrogant. That's kind of the naturalist view, like, in response to that. That, like, earlier in human history, we thought we were, like, special. Like, literally, our planet, the center of the universe. And, you know, we learned, oh, we orbit the sun. And then we learned, oh, actually, the sun is just part of this galaxy. And there's even other galaxies way out there. And, you know, this trend of, like, oh, we're not really, even our planet, like, we're not really that special.
Yeah.
But what's interesting, as, you know, all these things we're learning now, but we still haven't found life anywhere else, like, in a sense, it makes Earth seem more special.
Yeah.
And some of the things that, you know, in this book I read, Where is Everybody? And he also referenced this other book called Rare Earth by these two science professor guys. That, you know, there's all these things about how Earth is in this, like, you know, exact parameters, all these special things to make life possible. And Christians even like to talk about a lot of this stuff, you know. If the earth was too close to the sun, it would burn. If it was too far, it would freeze, you know, all these things. I actually felt like a deeper understanding of that from these guys under like the standard like scientific view, because it's one thing to have a planet where life is possible or to exist for a few thousand years. It's actually a whole nother level to have a planet where life can exist for 4 billion years.
Yeah.
Because you don't just have what they call the habitable zone. You have to be in the continuously habitable zone. Ooh. Which is even narrower, because over time the sun's brightness increases and it makes the earth hotter. And so you have to have these feedback loops to maintain temperature. And over thousands of years, the earth's axis would stay pretty stable, but without a large moon that we have, over millions of years, it would wobble so chaotically that it would be dangerous for life. All these things that, like, the view of life being on Earth for 4 billion years, it's actually really interesting how all these parameters seem to be lined up to allow that to be possible. I think it's really beautiful, actually.
Yeah. There is this really famous episode of the original Star Trek series, like the old 60s one.
Oh, yeah.
Called The Devil in the Dark.
You mean the original, the good ones?
They're all good, Josh.
I grew up on Next Generation, actually.
They're all good. It's called The Devil in the Dark, and it's famous as an episode in part because they took Star Trek and made a whole episode basically into like a campy horror film, like short film.
Mm-hmm.
But the central plot of it bases around them finding these life forms that are silicon-based instead of carbon-based.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And so that kind of became this trope in sci-fi, right, of carbon-based life forms and the Doctor being like, it's life, Jim, but not as we know it. You know, like that sort of thing. So this has always been a weird question for me.
Yeah.
Whenever we make all these definitions about like how life works and how it arises and blah, 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 we're just using how we see life on Earth as the example.
Yeah.
So like how life functions on Earth, like that's what we use to define the habitable zone and all those different things.
Yeah.
But if life on Earth evolved by way of adapting to the environment, doesn't it make total sense?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And this is something that in these books they refer to often. And like you're talking about the bias of the planet that we're on and life that's fit for it. And like there's some aspects that you can discard that way, but then there's others that seem more fundamental.
But like my question is, if life can arise chemically by adapting to the environment it's in, couldn't there just be insane, crazy forms of life that are perfectly adapted to all the other environments that other planets experience?
So theoretically, to some degree, but one, there's limits, like just chemically, like what kinds of chemicals can bond with each other, things like that.
Yeah.
You know, why they think water has to be a requirement. Possibly methane for different chemicals to dissolve in. You know, there's only so many. The reason carbon is such a popular idea is how widely it can interact with other atoms.
Yeah,
I guess. And so there is some idea that silicon possibly, but there's also things that just like having a solid surface. Having some of this goes into like what I was saying with the continuously habitable zone, just having reliability.
Yeah.
Like our sun apparently had a pretty constant output over the last 4 billion years, as they say.
Yeah.
Although it steadily increases gradually.
So that's where global warming comes from.
And another episode.
That's our new
mantra. There's a lot of these principles that seem to keep things stable or change gradually, whereas if they oscillated wildly, so like there's other solar systems where we found that it, like there's planets in highly elliptical orbits where the temperature would change extremely as he went real close and real far from the sun.
Yeah.
Or whether there's these giant, like, Jupiter-like planets that can throw off the orbits of other planets. Where anything that would make things change wildly, it would seem, even if there was life, it would kill it before it had a chance to adapt.
Ooh, interesting.
So that's an interesting aspect. So yeah, it, I mean, it's kind of this unresolved tension, like how much of this stuff is a bias of Earth and how much of it is fundamental.
Yeah.
So a lot of these, you know, these are mainstream conventional scientists looking deeply at these things saying a lot of this seems pretty fundamental.
Yeah.
And also there's the aspect of we know there's like, we have 8 or 9 planets and a bunch of moons.
8 or 9.
And so far there doesn't appear to be any life on any of those.
Yeah.
And so that aspect actually is going to be really interesting. Over the next probably 20 years, we will be able to definitively answer that.
Yeah.
Like, if we find any evidence of microbes on Mars, in Europa, on Titan, some of these moons in our solar system, and that will, I mean, that'll really answer this question of, like, is there life elsewhere?
Yeah.
I mean, it won't answer that fundamental question, but it'll answer this question of, like, this assumption of whether
we have any neighbors.
It should be common or not. Like, if we find microbial life on some other planets or moons, that will suggest that, like, life can arise under almost any condition or, you know, more conditions than we thought and could be common.
Yeah.
But if we don't, and it's possible that we won't, then that would lend to the idea that Earth is really rare. And so it's actually pretty exciting that we will be able to answer that question, at least, you know, more fairly conclusively within the next 10 to 20 years, assuming various NASA and other stuff goes as planned.
Do you have Netflix, Josh?
Nope.
Oh, okay.
Cost too much. The library's free.
Yeah. There's a cheesy sci-fi movie on Netflix called Europa.
Oh, nice.
It's about a team discovering life on Europa. It's really cool.
So I think I was saying earlier, like, if we find microbial life like that, that it will, I think Christianity will integrate it. I think what would be more interesting and challenging would be if we find intelligent life.
Yeah.
Because that gets into, like, do these other creatures, do they have souls? Do they sin? Do they need salvation?
Yeah.
Like, do we need to go witness to them?
What if they land and the first thing they do
is try to
tell us about Jesus?
I think that would be amazing.
We're here. We want to meet you guys. And by the way, do you have a moment to talk about our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ?
Is there Christian sci-fi that explores that concept? Because there should be.
Well, I mean, that's basically C.S. Lewis's deal with Out of the Silent Planet.
That's true,
In the sci-fi world C.S. Lewis sets up, basically all the other planets have life, and they call Earth the Silent Planet, because we're the only ones out of fellowship with God, because of sin.
Yeah.
Yeah. So those aliens, I guess, would be ministering to us.
C.S. Lewis sci-fi is awesome. Madeline L'Engle is kind of Christian sci-fi that explores some of that, too. Wrinkle in Time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's a good one.
Wind in the Door, all that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Forgot about those.
Yeah.
It's been a long time since I read those.
Yeah.
So I want to back up really quick.
Do it.
Actually, I want to ask about one thing. Do you know what a Dyson sphere is?
Yeah.
Yeah. Can we talk about that for a second?
Yeah. And Tabby's Star?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a Dyson sphere is a theory of how to look for life, potential life, in other galaxies or whatever. And the idea is that in order for a civilization to advance enough to be, I guess, intergalactic, you know, like to get to that point, then they would have to get to a point where they could harvest all the energy from their sun.
Yeah.
And so they would have to build essentially a huge
megastructure
sphere, of solar panels around their solar system to absorb all the light energy to give them what they need. And so, observably speaking, you would end up with essentially like the weight and gravity of a solar system with no light coming out.
Yeah.
And so some guy with the last name Dyson, I assume, came up with that idea and used it as a way of like, this is how we could look for advanced civilizations.
And I think like that sort of thing, they think we have the, like, we don't have the technology now to detect like the atmospheric composition of other planets all over the galaxy to, you know, tell if there's oxygen on them, which would be a huge sign that there's life, because as I just read in this rare earth book, oxygen's like chemically unstable. Eventually it'll go away if there's not life producing it, essentially.
That's interesting.
So like, we don't have that kind of technology, but apparently we do have the technology to like tell that there's nothing like that out there that we found.
Which kind of leads, were you going to talk about the great filter aspect?
Oh, no, I was going to talk about more recent news about this star that has a strange variable dips in brightness that don't seem to have a pattern.
Yeah, talk about that for a second.
There's this...
Which, by really quick, before you say that,
yeah,
if you want to learn more about Dyson spheres, Larry Niven, I think, has a set of science fiction, a series of science fiction books called Ringworld that really explore the idea of a Dyson sphere. It's really cool.
Yeah. Let's just skip it. It's not that relevant.
Okay.
To this topic.
I want to talk a little bit about the great filter. I think the Dyson sphere kind of leads to it really interestingly.
Yeah.
Because the whole concept of a Dyson sphere is, if you're talking about a civilization that has the technology and the ability to build a sphere around its entire solar system, that's a level of technological advancement that we can't fathom where we're at, right?
Yeah.
Which really, when you get down to it, like, in order for there to be engagement with life on other planets, there would have to be just eons of advancement in our understanding of technology and travel and communication.
Yeah. But the kind of the idea is, looking at the exponential growth in technology that we've had over the last 500 years, this idea that, you know, if there's nothing special about us and a civilization of similar intelligence could have emerged, you know, a hundred million years ago,
yeah,
then by now they should have been able to come up with that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Which kind of leads to this idea, some of these theories of like, why aren't we experiencing that?
Yeah.
And the one that I find the most interesting is this idea of the filter,
yeah,
the great filter, which has multiple aspects to it. But one of them, which I find really intriguing, is the idea that we're just first.
Mm-hmm.
We're just in first place.
Yeah. So, yeah, the idea is that we haven't found life out there because we're the first. And a lot of people that are looking at the Fermi paradox find that unsatisfying, because it seems to go back to, you know, the Christian idea of, well, we're just special because God created us. It's almost like the same kind of thing. Like, what are the odds that we would be the first ones? Like, come on.
Yeah, but then there's also an aspect of the great filter is the idea that there's something out there that just stops civilization and life from advancing to that point, that filters out the ability to advance that far.
Yeah.
Which, again, is kind of spooky.
Because
we may not be first, but whoever's ahead of us is dead, right?
Wait, but why calls that one we're effed?
Yeah.
Like, that's the summary. Like, yeah, the reason we don't... Like, again, if you're working with the assumption that life arises naturally, it should be everywhere, you have to explain why it's not everywhere. One explanation is, well, something happened, you know, they blow themselves up with nuclear warfare.
Yeah.
They, you know, a supernova explodes nearby and decimates the planet.
Yeah. No one survives long enough to make it, basically.
Yeah.
What I find interesting about that aspect on a spiritual level, and I don't know if this is where you want to go with this or not, but I think this is interesting because whenever a Christian discusses this sort of thing, it's from the aspect of, man, if we're alone, that's comforting, because that points to God's special creation of humanity and the special importance he places on us. And the harder thing for the Christian to think through is, what if there is life out there? What if it's intelligent? What does that mean about souls and sin and Jesus? And did Jesus die on an alien cross too? Like, and it brings up all these weird questions. But what I found in doing research for this podcast is, it seems like atheistic dudes or guys who are more skeptical or just more naturalistic. Or gals. Sorry. I was using the term asexually.
Non-gender?
Yeah. Folk who are coming from a more naturalistic or humanistic or atheistic perspective tend to be much more distraught at the idea that we are alone than the idea that we're not. I mean, I was reading, I was reading guys who were talking through the concept of the Great Filter, and it was like legitimately bringing on like these existential crisis and like actual kind of deep terror for some people as they were processing that. The idea that we're actually alone, and it was really sorrowful and hard and spiritual damaging. And it's interesting to me to see the difference there, the difference in how two different worldviews process that thought.
Yeah. It's like there seems to be this universal recognition. There's something precious and beautiful. Just the fact that we're here able to observe the universe.
Yeah.
And so just trying to make sense of that.
Yeah. Do you have any other thoughts on this, man?
I think it's possible that there's other life out there. I personally think there may be simple life out there. I don't believe there's intelligent life out there. I think it would be really interesting and amazing if it is. I don't expect it under my worldview. And with a lot of the stuff I look at, even under the... even under, you know, a long view, the mainstream scientific view, I see such beauty and purpose in all these little things lining up.
Yeah.
To create or to allow life to exist here. That's really beautiful. I think that's harder to explain under a natural view.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'm open to... if we find any kind of life, I'll be stoked. I'll think it's the most amazing thing we've ever discovered. I think God is a creative God. Jesus is creative. And so that's why I'm not, you know, like, I've been really meditating on Colossians 1 lately.
Yeah.
Which talks about Christ being the center of creation. And in him all things were made. He sustains all things. This idea that, like, and N.T. Wright talks about this some, how we usually think of just about God creating in Genesis or whatever. But, like, this idea from John 1 and Colossians 1 that Christ is central to it.
Yeah.
And, like, something about, like, the creativeness of that in Jesus, like, I'm not threatened by this, you know, these potential concepts of souls and intelligent life and everything. I feel like if we did discover it, somehow it would be integrated into that in some way that we can't really understand.
Yeah. It's interesting. I'm too dumb to have an opinion on this. You know what I mean? I think it would be so cool if we found life elsewhere in the universe. In terms of, do I believe that? I mean, the truth is out there, man. I believe anything that this story tells me. What was that?
DC Talk.
Oh, man. No, that was a Mulder. That was a Fox Mulder reference. That was not a DC Talk reference. Wow. But no, I just I think it'd be so cool. I don't really think it would affect me. You know what I mean? Like, I just, if aliens landed on our planet tomorrow and we're super chill and just wanted to hang out and watch Netflix or something, like, I don't think that would mess with me. I mean, I'd be curious and asking a lot of questions and those things. I guess I just think God is bigger than that. And
yeah, I will say, if it happens, I don't think it'll be through aliens landing on our planet and saying hello.
Because seriously, if you drove by, you'd be like, no, I'm not hanging out there.
I think it'll be like a gradual thing where, like, we find some signs that could be interpreted as life somewhere else, but there's doubts and some people will be skeptical, and it'll just kind of be this gradual thing that eventually it'll be like, okay, we're pretty confident. Now we know.
We didn't mention this earlier. I know we're kind of ending out this section, but you just reminded me of it. One of the explanations for the Fermi paradox is that all the intelligent life out there has just agreed to, like, leave us alone.
Yeah, it's called the zoo hypothesis.
Yeah.
That, like, we're not ready for the truth.
Which is that's how Star Trek handles it.
Yeah. Or, like, we're not worthy yet.
I love the idea of a whole group of aliens, like, sitting down and talking about Earth, and they're just like, you know what? Let's not go there.
Yeah.
And let's just make it so they don't even know we're here.
Yeah.
I just love that.
It's fun. Idea. And again, the problem with a lot of those kinds is that it requires all the other life out there to like be unified and nobody to like go rogue.
Yeah, we're ever. Super late to the party.
And just be like, hey guys. But it, yeah, I think it's really interesting. I would love to talk about this more with non-believers.
Let's next time we get Andy on, let's ask Andy about it.
He's like, man, he's probably like, man, I just want to talk about morality with you guys. I don't care about aliens.
I don't care about aliens.
I don't know. Maybe he does.
Dude, have you seen, I'm going to reference a meme. Have you seen the meme with the, you are here and it like starts with Earth and it keeps expanding out and showing the whole universe.
Yeah.
And it expands out and expands out and expands out. And it's like supposed to give you this feeling of like the grandness of the universe and how
insignificant,
so insignificant we are. And when it zooms out like to the biggest possible, it shows Jesus standing over the universe. But then there's like a red dot and an arrow pointing you are here, you know, and it's so tiny. And Jesus is looking at the whole universe and he goes, don't look at porn.
Wait, seriously?
Yeah, that's what it says. Is the whole thing is making parody? Fun of Christianity, saying
like,
why, how ridiculous is it if the universe is that big that God would care if you looked at porn.
Well, but some people get existential from that side. If all that's, you know, then what does anything matter?
Yeah, exactly. The universe is
that brings us back to morality episode that we're going to have Andy back on for.
Yeah, awesome.
Awesome.
Oh, man, so that's good. That's I think that's a good discussion. If there's anything you think we missed or didn't cover well on that or you have further questions, hit us up on Twitter, hit us up on Facebook. You can always email us, pbrcast@gmail.com. If you tweet or post with the PBR hashtag, we monitor that hashtag, so we'll look for that. You can always hit me and Josh up on our personal accounts. We're both on Twitter and Facebook and
all right.
Nintendo Miitomo. Yeah. Hey. I don't know. I was trying to think. LinkedIn. There we go. We're both on LinkedIn.
Technically, yes. yeah. Thank you all for listening and downloading and telling us you like it.
Yeah. For real, real. We got thing of the week, right?
Yep, we got a...
Oh, dang it. I always do that.
Thing of the week.
Thing of the week.
So I was thinking on this segment we could do some stuff talking about like a book we just read or a podcast that we liked.
Yeah.
I just read, actually, audio listened... Do you say audiobook? Do you listen to it? Do you read it?
You know, I say read because it makes easier. More sense.
Yeah.
But then I feel like I'm kind of lying to people because it's so much easier to listen to a book than to read one.
Yeah. And but you don't get it as deeply, I feel like.
I take a lot of notes on audiobooks.
Well, I try to do it while I'm coding at work.
That's probably why, Josh.
But anyway, I listen to Simply Christian by N.T. Wright.
Ooh, I have not read that yet.
The subtitle is Why Christianity Makes Sense.
Yeah.
I actually read this because Garrett was reading it, and I was curious about it.
Yeah.
I hadn't read much N.T. Wright. I always had this impression he's kind of this theological, dry, scholarly kind of guy that you probably read books of him in your seminary classes. Did you?
No. I think most of the people that were picking up my textbooks probably didn't like N.T. Wright.
Oh, really?
I probably thought he was too liberal or something.
See, I'm not, like, he's, learned
he's Anglican,
in,
right?
Yeah. But I feel like he seemed pretty orthodox in this
book.
Yeah,
I like him. I like him a lot.
Like, anyway, he kind of feels like a modern C.S. Lewis, I guess, at least in this book, and he kind of gets marketed as that a little bit, I guess.
Yeah.
But it just kind of goes through, like, kind of this fresh look at, like, what is Christianity and the story through the Bible and connecting it to kind of these deep human longings. And I just found it to be, I found it to have a lot of, like, in both, like, on a detail level, like a lot of just cool little specific little insights, kind of like the kind of stuff that C.S. Lewis would do. And also in a general sense, just kind of like presenting this fresh kind of view, a refreshing view of Christianity, especially kind of in the context of over the last few years, like seeing people make claims of like, not only that they don't believe in Christianity, but that it doesn't even make sense, or that it's harmful, or that it's contradictory, or that it's messed up, or something. Just kind of hearing this view of, like, just kind of going through the basic doctrine, but, like, in this really, like, not in a dry, boring way, but in this kind of relatable way. Just kind of going through the story of Christianity.
Yeah.
And, like, sin and redemption, like, in the world, and how we participate in it. I just found it really, really encouraging, I guess. So, Simply Christian by N.T. Wright.
I have something I want to share.
Share it.
Can I share something real quick? I'm trying to look it up. I've mentioned it before, but have you listened to Travis Teal Page's stuff?
Oh, no.
Okay, so they have he has a new music video, and it's a cover song. But, man, it's so good. It's so good, dude. I want to play... I asked him if we could play a clip from this, and I really want to do it. It's a cover of the song I Can't Make You Love Me, which is a famous song, apparently. Apparently. But just listen to this guitar. Listen to this.
It's a drum.
And over here it comes in. Listen to that guitar riff all day.
New intro. Just kidding, Kingly. Just kidding. Turn down
the light. Yeah, but anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there.
Say the name again.
Travis Teal Page. You got to put the middle name in there. T E E L. He's got an EP out. That's really, really, really good. He's a personal friend, but he like worked through like just some faith deconstruction stuff, and then landed back in Christianity. And like the EP involves a lot of that. Like it's a lot of that story of him working through, wrestling with some stuff in faith, and like asking some really hard questions. It's really cool. And they're working on some new stuff right now. So I do want to plug them, but like, it's just really good stuff. So you should look them up on YouTube, or wherever you stream your music, Travis Teal Page. It's very excellent. So
awesome.
That's my deal on that.
Awesome.
You got anything else, man?
That's all for today, kids.
Okie doke. Well, we always want to say a big thank you to Kingly. You guys are awesome. Thank you for letting us use your awesome music on our crappy podcast. We so desperately need this. So thanks, guys. Check out Kingly, kinglyofficial.com. They got stuff on all the streaming services, and they got stuff on iTunes and all that jazz, too. So make sure you support them as a way of saying thank you for them supporting us. On that note, I'm going to go read some X-Files fan fiction because I'm a heretic.
I'm gonna go read a cheesy Christian sci-fi series because I'm a good Christian.
We should do stupid topics more often because we finished in under an hour.
Well, I didn't fill it out with like 12 theological viewpoints.
Here's this book I read from 1742. Thanks a lot, Josh. We don't care.